You're listening to Epitaph, The Others. The Others is a special Epitaph production created exclusively for our Patreon subscribers. This is episode 4, The White Witch of Niles Canyon Road.
Every February 26th since 1938, a woman appears alongside Niles Canyon Road just east of Fresno, California. She's trying to get back to San Francisco. A husband and wife were said to have picked her up, and as with most of these stories, she got into the backseat of the car. Conversation revealed she was trying to get back to an address on Sutter Street to visit her mother. When they arrived at the toll station on the Dumbarton Bridge, the driver handed the collector a dollar. "Three of us," he said. The collector looked at the backseat. "Three?" The driver turned and looked, but there was no one in the backseat anymore. The collector shook his head as he made change. Confused, the couple went ahead and drove to the address on Sutter Street, where a middle-aged woman came to the door. She gave the familiar story about her daughter having been killed in an automobile accident in Niles Canyon on February 26th, and every year on that day, she tries to come home. Carloads of curious people drove through the steep-walled canyon, watching for the Niles ghost girl. Some even reported seeing her. In 1950, the Oakdale Leader reported that just before midnight on September 26th, the sheriff's office in Niles had received several excited phone calls from motorists who had seen the girl on a railroad overpass above Niles Canyon Road. The first call probably could have been ignored as a hoax, maybe even the second. But by the time the third call arrived, they decided that they needed to send someone to investigate. When they arrived, several cars were stopped, and the officers saw the same thing that everyone else was witnessing, and no doubt, what the callers had reported. An eerie white figure was moving silently back and forth on the train trestle. Fremont, California, was formed in 1956 by merging five towns, Centerville, Niles, Irvington, Mission San Jose, and Warm Springs, in what used to be Washington Township. The picturesque Niles Canyon, still mostly undeveloped, contains much of the history of that area. That history, or at least the part that's recorded, began with two flour mills built at the mouth of the canyon in 1850 and 1856 by the Vallejo family. Some of the foundations of those buildings still exist and are registered as California landmarks. In 1869, the Transcontinental Railroad came to the area. The 1,912-mile rail line connected Omaha, Nebraska with the Oakland Long Wharf in San Francisco Bay, and it was run through Niles Canyon. And until Interstate 680 was built in the mid-1970s, Niles Canyon Road was the main route from Fremont to the nearby towns of Pleasanton and Livermore. But its biggest claim to fame might be that it was once a center for filmmaking. Chicago-based SNA Studios, co-owned by the first cowboy movie star Gilbert Anderson, opened a studio in Niles in 1913. Anderson made more than 375 westerns in the canyon, cranking them out at an unbelievable rate of one movie every 2 weeks. In 1914, he hired an English actor by the name of Charlie Chaplin, and in April of 1915, they filmed one of Chaplin's most iconic films, The Tramp. In 1916, though, SNA closed its studio down. The movie industry had gone south to a place that had warmer weather, brighter sunlight, and more importantly, closer proximity to a major city. But within just a few years, Niles Canyon would have another claim to fame, a ghost that walked Niles Canyon Road every February 26th. There have been many suggestions for the origins of Niles Canyon's ghost over the years, and looking at the stories, it appears that she wasn't always a vanishing hitchhiker. In some versions of the legend, she was simply seen alongside the highway near a spot where she'd lost her life. Sometime in the late 1940s, as the urban legend was spreading around the country, the legend of the Niles Canyon ghost became crossed with the vanishing hitchhiker legend. I can trace written references of the ghost back to 1947, when Leona Ward published a story overheard at the Hayward Sheriff's Office in the Hayward Daily Review. Two deputies had stopped at a restaurant on Friday, October 17th, and heard a story from the owner of the restaurant about two truck drivers who'd stopped by earlier in the evening. They'd told him that they'd picked up a young woman hitchhiking through the canyon. She asked to be dropped off at Niles Junction and sat between them in the cab, but when one of them turned to ask her a question, she was gone. Leona Ward said that the sheriff's officers told her that stories like that had been heard frequently in the canyon. In a column of Around Sunol, Victoria Christian writes that a local radio personality, Mel Ventner, first announced the story, which was then picked up by newspapers. In a blog about the history of the legend, local resident and historian David Mustardi points to 1947 as the date of that radio broadcast. A February 28, 1950 article in the Hayward Daily Review details the incident where the sheriff's deputies responded to frantic calls and encountered the ghost themselves. Her legend then makes another appearance in print just a few months later, in May, in the Oakdale Leader. The Oakdale Leader said that 4 years earlier, so sometime around 1946, the township register in Niles had reported the story of the ghost alongside a photo of what appears to be a woman in a white sheet beside Niles Canyon Road. The caption for that photo read, "Believe it or not, this is what showed up when a staff photographer on the township register at Niles had his negatives developed after being sent on assignment to get a picture of the ghost girl to settle the myth. After trotting the highway for several hours looking for the ghostly hitchhiker, the photographer turned his lens to recording picturesque nature studies. When his negatives were developed, the outlines of the figure in the right foreground had been recorded. The staff on the township register say they do not attempt to make believers of anyone. For those who believe in ghosts, the above picture is presented. For those who do not believe in ghosts, the above picture is presented." Also in 1950, in a book titled The History of Washington Township, an account of the legend recorded the story as follows. "Many years ago, on the 26th of February, a young girl was killed in the canyon. Every year on that day, she appears on the roadside begging to be taken to her home in San Francisco. Invariably, when her kind deliverers reach the Dumbarton Bridge tollgate, she's gone. Drivers who go on to her San Francisco address are told the same thing happens each year. Credence ranges from those who openly scoff to those who fear to drive through the canyon on February 26th. That version of the legend appears in the second edition of the book. The first edition, published in 1904, makes no mention of it. It's hard to say, though, whether that means that the ghost of Niles Canyon made its first appearance sometime after 1904, or if the women's club who wrote the book simply didn't think enough of it to include it in their history the first time around. But it does suggest that by 1950, the story was well known in the area. How the ghost came to be, though, isn't really clear. Some suggest the earliest versions of the legend are that a woman, possibly with the last name Lowry, was on her way to a wedding in a horse-drawn carriage and either fell from her carriage and was struck by a car, or the carriage itself was struck by a car at Scott's Corner near what is now Highway 84 and Highway 680. The Hayward Leader's article suggests that the story originated with a young girl who mysteriously disappeared years ago near the Stony Brook Park Railroad trestle in the canyon, and her body was never found. A third version of the legend suggests that she was an actress working for the SNA Film Company and having an affair with the owner and star of the company, Gilbert, or Bronco Billy, Anderson. On the set of one of their films, she confronted him about leaving his wife for her, and when he refused, she left the set in tears and was never seen again. It seems a rather dramatic turn of events for her to have died in Niles Canyon rather than, you know, simply going home or not working with him again, but that is, I suppose, what makes it a legend. These stories are all more associated with the Lady in White haunting, though. Then, as popularity of the vanishing hitchhiker legend spread, newspapers began incorporating elements of the urban legend that she had died in an automobile accident, and on the anniversary of her death, February 26th, she would reappear and try to finally get home. These stories all hold enough clues for us to be able to investigate them, but I still have trouble saying that any of them were the story that led to the legend of the Niles Canyon ghost, and let me explain why. First, we began looking into this story for the vanishing hitchhiker tale it told. That story, as it was relayed in the early newspaper articles, was very specific that the young woman died in an automobile accident on Niles Canyon Road on February 26th of 1938. Several of the articles even took it further, stating that she's trying to get back to an address on Sutter Street in San Francisco, and that she disappears near the Dumbarton Bridge's toll gate. However, if there was an accident on that date, it wasn't recorded in any of the local newspapers currently available in any of the various online digital archives. Just to be sure we weren't missing anything, we even went through all of the deaths in Alameda County in the year 1938. Of the five women who died on February 26th, four of them were 78 years old or older. The other, Mary J. Merrick, was 33. I can't say what her cause of death was because I'm unable to trace the death certificates or the obituaries for any of these women. Without that information, I have to say that it's possible that they died in Niles Canyon in a way that would have lent itself to the legend. But as there aren't any newspaper articles mentioning any of the women, I feel reasonably confident in thinking that it's likely that their deaths were from far more mundane circumstances. Failing to find anything fitting with the year, I broadened the search to find fatal accidents of any kind in Niles Canyon that would have taken place on February 26th, any year between 1850, which goes back to when California was first admitted to the Union, and is obviously many decades before the widespread use of automobiles, and when the story first started appearing as a local legend in the mid-1940s. And there simply don't appear to be any. If there is a connection to that date, it doesn't appear that her death occurred then. Which would seem to mean that the vanishing hitchhiker story, or at least the version of it that includes a specific date for her death, is false. But, that said, our research did come up with some interesting occurrences in the history of Niles Canyon that could certainly have lent themselves to the other ghost story, and several of those events even seem to parallel the suggestions for how her ghost came to be. One involved an accident with a horse-drawn wagon. Another was a young woman who'd gone missing in the canyon whose body was never found. And yes, there was even an untimely death of a young actress with the SNA film company. But do any of these events give us an idea as to just who the ghost of Niles Canyon may have been? One of the more popular suggestions from the beginning of the Niles Canyon legend among locals begins with a carriage and a woman whose last name was Lowry. According to extensive research done by Jamie Rubio, which she's published in her book, Stories of the Forgotten, Infamous, Famous, and Unremembered, and on her blog Dreaming Casually, the connection of that name to the Niles Canyon legend seems to have begun with an old caretaker at the Pleasanton Memorial Garden Cemetery. She says that the caretaker had told the story not only to visitors at the cemetery, but also to the local newspapers. And there is a Lucinda Lowry in the index at Pleasanton Memorial Garden Cemetery. On September 24th, 1895, she, or someone in her name, purchased the deed to a burial plot in Lot 178 and either died or was buried that same day. There's also a notation next to her name that says, "Killed by cars." This certainly does seem like the genesis for that version of the ghost's origin. However, despite the purchase of the burial plot, Jamie couldn't find any records to show that a woman with the last name Lowry, regardless of how it was spelled, had actually died that day. She did find, however, that on September 4th, 1895, 20 days before the plot was purchased and the burial was recorded, a man named Samuel Lowry was struck and killed by rail cars near Pleasanton. He'd been working as a farmhand at the time of his death, and his wife's name was Lucinda. At the time of Samuel Lowry's death, Lucinda was in Ballard, Washington. The San Francisco Call reported that she'd sent a dispatch to the coroner stating that she had no money and asked the remains be buried here, in California. 20 days later, someone purchased a plot for Samuel Lowry's remains and put the deed in his widow's name. Lucinda herself passed away several decades later on July 11th, 1924, and she's buried at the Bayview Cemetery in Bellingham, Washington. It doesn't appear that Lucinda Lowry was ever actually in Alameda County, despite the old story told by the cemetery caretaker. So while I believe that this is indeed how that version of the ghost's origin came into being, I think it's safe to say that Lucinda Lowry isn't haunting Niles Canyon. But there was another accident that would capture the area's attention just a few years later. Near sunset on March 18th of 1897, a man and a woman were seen riding up the canyon in a horse-drawn wagon, presumably headed towards Sunol. On the road from Niles to Sunol, there were several places that wagons could normally ford the Alameda Creek, but because of recent rains, the water was running higher and faster than normal. The next day, the wagon and the horse were found in the river. The horse had been drowned, but the man and woman were gone, presumed to have been washed away in the river current. For 2 days, rescuers searched the river and its banks, looking for the man and woman who'd been aboard the wagon when it went into the water, but no bodies were found. The only clues as to the identity of the wagon's occupants were found in a trunk that contained men's clothing, a raffle ticket, several photos, and a memo book that had German writing and the name Klaus Anthony written inside it. George Fisher, the mayor of Niles, told the San Francisco Examiner, "The whole thing is a deep mystery to the people in our little town. Some people say a man and a woman were seen in the rig. Other people say that the man was alone. I was told today that a man dripping wet was seen walking down the railroad track at night, and when people approached him, he ran away into the woods and kept out of sight. The mystery continued to spread throughout the area, with the Oakland Tribune writing, "If Klaus Anthony is not at the bottom of Alameda Creek, he may be wanted by the sheriff." Klaus Anthony was indeed not at the bottom of Alameda Creek. He was found in Niles, not long after the accident, working as a laborer on a farm. He told police that despite the high water and a current strong enough to have pulled the wagon downstream and drowned the horse, he had managed to get out of the river without any trouble, apart from getting his clothes wet. He also said that he didn't have a woman with him, despite several witnesses reporting that he had. Though running and hiding in the woods after being spotted after the accident is certainly suspicious behavior, nothing else was written about his possible companion, and no body was ever found, so it might be safe to assume that his claims of being alone were true. However, in doing our research for this story, we also discovered that Klaus Anthony was not in the best of mental health. In fact, within a month of the incident, he would find himself involuntarily committed at the Stockton State Hospital, which was California's first psychiatric hospital, due to what they listed as gastric dementia and a mania for collecting bugs and various insects. Klaus was first committed on April 18th, just 1 month after his wagon went into the Alameda Creek, and upon admittance, he was said to stand frequently for many minutes in one position with a fixed gaze. His symptoms were incoordination, wandering mind, loss of memory, and at times, intense stubbornness. On the admittance log next to his, the person that they were committing had confessed to murder, but no one believed him. So based on the scant details recorded in those logs, it's impossible to know the true severity of Klaus's issues. Looking at the notes, it certainly doesn't seem to me like the sort of thing that should have landed him in the psychiatric hospital. But there must have been something more severe to his symptoms, because except for an escape attempt on September 2nd later that year in 1897, he would remain a patient at Stockton State Hospital for the next 17 years. If Klaus was behaving in increasingly erratic ways, and if a woman was with him when the wagon went into the water, with her whereabouts unaccounted for, concern that he'd be accused of wrongdoing might have led him to run and hide in the woods. And if that woman was drowned, rather accidentally or on purpose, it could explain why her ghost may still appear there. Could that have been what happened? Sure. Do I think that's what happened? No. I feel like it's a pretty huge leap to think that he'd be capable of letting a woman drown, or worse, participating in her drowning, simply because he'd had a mental health crisis and an unhealthy fascination with entomology. So, despite the oddness of that particular incident and what happened after, and despite the story having involved a horse-drawn carriage or wagon, I think we probably need to set that story aside as a possible origin for the legend. In 1950, in one of the earlier articles on the ghost, the Hayward Leader suggested that rather than an accident with a horse-drawn carriage or wagon, the ghost was actually that of a young girl who, in the 1930s, mysteriously disappeared years ago near the Stony Brook Park Railroad trestle in the canyon, and her body was never found. And we actually found a story that fits this. On July 31st of 1936, the San Francisco Examiner ran a story detailing the arrest of a middle-aged caretaker of a Niles Canyon resort. 45-year-old Fred Landers, also known as Shorty, was accused of having hosted what the paper called an all-night drinking orgy with three young girls. The three girls, Patricia Burke, aged 15, Ruth Pittman, aged 14, and Estelle Armstrong, aged 13, had all run away from the Big Sisters home in Oakland, California, which provided housing for runaway, abused, and abandoned women and children, pregnant teenage girls, and women who were on probation or were otherwise in trouble with the law. The girls had managed to hitchhike their way to Lakeside Park in Niles Canyon, and there they were found by Fred Landers, who gave them shelter and alcohol. The next morning, Burke and Pittman started south, leaving the 13-year-old Estelle Armstrong with Fred Landers. 3 days and 350 miles later, after a statewide search, Patricia Burke and Ruth Pittman were picked up by police in Los Angeles. But when the police arrived at Landers' place to collect Estelle Armstrong and take her back to the Big Sisters home, Estelle was missing. They arrested Landers and took him to the Alameda County Jail for questioning. There, he admitted that he had entertained the girls, but he denied having any sort of immoral relations with any of them. When asked where Estelle Armstrong was, he told police that he'd put her on a bus that morning to join up with her friends in Los Angeles. He'd paid for her ticket, and even gave her $1.50 for food, he said. And then, nothing else is written about the missing girl. Not a single follow-up article to be found anywhere. No mentions of Estelle Armstrong or Fred Landers in any newspaper. So, was Estelle the girl who'd gone missing in the canyon and whose body was never found? Yeah, maybe. Digging into the census records for 1930, I found a 7-year-old Estelle Armstrong living with her parents, William and Margaret, at 5461 Foothill Boulevard in Oakland, California. Estelle's birth date was February 20th, 1923, not February 26th, no, but close enough that I found it to be an interesting coincidence. And not only is this the only Estelle Armstrong listed in Alameda County, this would also make her the right age to have been the Estelle Armstrong who went missing in 1936. But even so, I don't think she's a ghost. Because in 1940, Estelle Armstrong was now 17 years old and living as a boarder with her grandmother in a home at 644 Merrimack in Oakland. Thankfully, even though she'd gone missing in the canyon, the reason that no one ever found her body, as the newspaper wrote, was that she survived and she was returned to Oakland and to the care of her grandmother. So that particular story had a happy ending. One of the other legends about the origin of the ghost is a tale that is apparently as old as the movie industry itself, a young starlet having an affair with a movie studio mogul. And while I find no reason to think that this part of the story is true, I believe I have found how that version of the ghost's origin came to be. In 1911, a young woman graduated from Wellesley with dreams of becoming an actress. In those days, though, a legitimate acting career meant acting on the stage, not the screen. She met a man named Gilbert Anderson during one of his visits to New York, and he offered her the position of leading woman in his films if she'd agree to go with him back to California. The young woman was just 18 years old, and her parents were so opposed to her appearing in movies that, as with many actors and actresses, she took on an assumed name. The name that she chose for herself was Vida Bertram. She told a reporter once that though she had no ambitions of becoming a great actress, she was proud of the work she was doing. "I love the life I'm living," she said, "but out of deference to scruples which my parents entertain, I respect their wishes and will not tell you who I am. I assure you, my father is a well-known professional man and writer in Boston, and my brother is a noted lawyer in New York." Upon her death, other details were revealed that make me think that she either switched the details of those locations to throw the writer off of the trail of her true identity, or the writer himself mixed the details up to protect her. Her debut came as Nan Morgan in the 1912 film The Ranch Girl's Mistake, and true to his word, Anderson would put her in 24 other films that year. She left the set of her last movie, Bronco Billy Outwitted, not due to a fight with Anderson about some refusal to leave his wife, but rather due to stomach pain. She was checked into a hospital in Oakland, California, and diagnosed with acute appendicitis. Appendicitis was a much bigger deal in those days, and made aware of the gravity of her condition, she revealed her identity to the hospital staff and asked them to contact her family back east. But telegrams to her father went unanswered. Vida would have the surgery, but she would never recover. Vida Bertram, the actress whose real name was Adele Buck, died as a result of complications of surgery at 10 a.m. on August 26, 1912. She was just 20 years old. She was laid to rest at Woodlawn Cemetery in Bronx, New York. Just as she'd said, her death revealed that she'd been the daughter of Jerome Buck, editor of the New York Sun. He had refused to listen to her desire for an acting career and had forbidden her from pursuing it. He wasn't particularly fond of her fiancé, Mr. L.H. Merrill, either. Mr. Merrill was also in the newspaper industry and had followed Vida West, taking a job in Los Angeles. When he was notified of her illness, he came to the hospital in Oakland and was at her side when she passed. She was one of the first film actresses to be mourned by the public and is often cited as the first film actress whose death drew significant media attention. From everything she'd said before her death, Vida Bertram made clear that she loved the life she had created for herself as an actress in the early movie industry. She said she was wedded to it, and that she couldn't imagine ever going back to anything else. So it wouldn't be hard for me to think that, if there truly was a ghost of a woman wandering Niles Canyon, it could be Vida Bertram. The first call probably could have been ignored, maybe even the second. But by the time the third call arrived, the Alameda County Sheriff's Department had decided that they needed to send someone to investigate. When they arrived at the scene, several cars were stopped, and deputies Bill Rose and Ed Pavin saw the same thing that everybody else was witnessing, and no doubt what the callers had reported. An eerie white figure was moving silently back and forth on the train trestle above the road. Deputy Rose got out of the car, drew his pistol, and immediately fired two shots into the air. The ghost dropped to the train tracks and a white sheet fluttered to the highway below. "Don't shoot," it yelled. "I'm coming down." On that particular night, there was no doubt as to the identity of the ghost of Niles Canyon. He was a 22-year-old man named William Clarence Chivers. Officers returned him to his friends who were hiding on the hillside and told them all to go home and go to bed. As it turns out, that may actually be the story that is closest to the truth in this particular legend. A former newsman in the area and a man who gave the legend its most publicity admitted that, though other news outlets had picked it up, the story was entirely fictional. He'd made it up to sell papers, and after the incident with deputies firing at kids in sheets, he decided to stop promoting it, worried that someone was going to get hurt. According to William's older brother, Tony, the last paragraph in Rose and Pavin's report on the incident that night began, "The entire community of Niles showed a good deal of concern over the old adage of the ghost of Niles Canyon on this date," and it concluded by saying, in all capital letters, "The ghost no longer walks." William Clarence Chivers passed away on January 14th of 2007. He was survived by, among others, his brother Tony, and friends who, nearly 60 years later, still laughed about his night as the ghost girl of Niles Canyon.
You have been listening to Episode 4, The White Witch of Niles Canyon Road. The content of this podcast is copyright Epitaph Incorporated, 2019, all rights reserved.